When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink. Indiana coming off a narrow 64-62 loss against Northwestern on Wednesday night. Hoosiers, quick turnaround, will host Illinois on Saturday afternoon. And to help us actually answer some questions that we've got this week from our community at Inside the Hall, Tony Adranja from the Assembly Calls community does a lot of film work there. And you probably, if you're an IU fan, you've definitely seen him on Twitter, always has some astute takes. And Tony, good to have you back on the show. How are you doing today?
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me on, Alex. Doing well. It's Friday. IU's got a noon game tomorrow. Super jazzed up about that.
So let's just dive into some of these questions. I pulled a few of these out that I thought really stood out. The first one, just asking from a coach's perspective, what do you think changed the halftime of the Northwestern game to the second half? Particularly how, I guess they wanted to know how Indiana was able to, I guess, to find its footing offensively and attack some of those double teams more effectively.
Yeah, I think it's twofold a bit. I'll start with kind of the obvious, easy answer is that, you know, Northwestern started taking bad shots, particularly Chase Audige. That factored in, certainly. Audige is a fairly wildly inefficient player. In the first half, kind of caught lightning in a bottle, got Northwestern out to a big lead, and then he started taking some of those bad shots in the second half, long rebounds leading to Indiana runouts, letting guys get in transition, finding Trace on the break, where then he's able to do things without having to absorb that double team. So that's one of the first things that I would point out, that Northwestern kind of helped us out a bit in that sense. Now, you could flip that on its head and say Indiana took bad shots in the first half that led to Northwestern run out, multiple factors in the game, obviously. But, that's a big one for Indiana to get back in the game. And then offensively on those double teams, Indiana, they did a little bit of a lift rather than sit a guy in the corner that helped bring a defender up on those double teams on the help side. But really, it was more of a point of emphasis because they were doing this in the first half. But essentially, when Trace was getting double teamed, Northwestern, it's kind of a pack line staple to bring two bigs to the double. A lot of teams will bring a guard as a doubler along with the guy guarding the post. With Northwestern, they bring two bigs. And with that said, when they bring those two bigs, their guy that then falls into help side is trying to take away a guy like Race Thompson or Malik Renew. And so Indiana has a distinct height advantage. So really is more of a point of emphasis. I felt Race Thompson was really getting into that help side guard and showing his hand and being able to kind of give Trace a passing window. Now, I think it was probably said, listen, Trace, they're going to double you. Race, you really got to get in there, give Trace a big open window that he can hit. And Trace, you got to look for that, because it was clearly a point of emphasis in that second half, just based on how many times Indiana, I think I counted seven big to big passes that led to layups in that second half. And so, and where there was zero in the first half. So I think that was really just a point of emphasis. Now, the flip side of that is, you know, why Northwestern doubling isn't, you know, new to anybody. So why that wasn't more of a point of emphasis going into the game is a question, or if it was a point of emphasis, why wasn't it executed? And I think Trace came out in his post game availability and said, like, it's on me. I didn't come out ready to play. So, you know, I'd be interested in hearing, you know, in knowing more. Obviously we'll never know if it was more of a execution issue where Coach Woodson got into the guys at halftime and was like, look, we talked about this. You need to get into him. You need to find him. Or if it was more of, hey, schematically, we screwed this up. And we're going to change things or tweak things and you need to do X, Y, and Z. So, those were the two big things that I thought factored into that comeback against Northwestern.
Yeah, so this kind of leads me into just a question I have, and interested in what you think. It's something I wrote about a little bit in the preview that I posted this morning for the Illinois game. We look back at the first matchup, and for whatever reason, I guess it was maybe not the game plan going in, and it's not something you can just flip a switch and change, but Illinois decided they were going to guard Trace Jackson-Davis straight up in Champaign. Obviously not a great decision when a guy goes 15 of 19 from the field and scores 35 points on you. Maybe the idea was, hey, we're just going to let him get his and try to stop everybody else. What do you think it's going to look like this time from an Illinois perspective? Are they going to try the same strategy, or have they learned maybe from watching Indiana film the last couple of weeks or something else they can do? And just second part of that, this, I'm curious, from a coaching perspective, if you were prepping for Indiana, what would you do to try to slow Trace Jackson-Davis down? Because it's obviously at this point, it seems like he's just going to get his numbers no matter what you try to do. He's done it now for such a sustained period of time that it doesn't seem like there's going to be many teams that are going to be able to hold him below 20 and 10 at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with Illinois, you know, I think it's important to note that in the Big Ten, you're playing basically every 3 to 4 days. And so, you know, your game plan prep for a team, you really are only having a day or two to actually practice and prep. And so if you aren't practicing that big to big double day in, day out, like Northwestern does, like that's their thing. That's their identity. We're going to do two bigs doubling the post. If you're not doing that and drilling that in practice throughout the season, it's going to be really hard to execute on that, you know, on one-offs where you might play a Trace Jackson-Davis or a Zach Edey or something like that. So I think as a coach, you have to stay true to your team's defensive identity. Now, that's not to say you can't deviate from what you do time and, you know, at different time periods, but, you know, Illinois could watch that first half of Indiana and say, wow, that big-to-big double really worked for them. We should do that to Trace. But if they've never practiced that or worked on that, they're going to get burned because their guys aren't going to be used to that. And, you know, I think they'll get burned on that. Now, will Illinois play it the same way? You know, I think they might, just based on Brad Underwood's post-game comments. He was, you know, he was very stuck in his ways, it seemed. Now, I don't know if that was just like a ploy so Indiana would think they're going to do something later. But, you know, he seemed to be more disappointed. I think it was in maybe Geronimo had double digits, or a couple other players had double digits or close to double digits that game. And he pointed those guys out as the problem, more so than Trace's, you know, four missed shot game. So I could honestly see Illinois trying to play it the same way straight up. You know, I'm a firm believer in, and I talked about this when Indiana played Zach Edey, is, throw different looks at players like Trace and Edey and things like that to where they're just never comfortable. Like sometimes you might send a double. Sometimes it might be a delayed double when you're not doing it until the dribble. Sometimes it might be on the catch. Sometimes you're bringing it from the baseline. Sometimes you're coming from the high side, and just give them different looks to where they're not comfortable. Because, you know, that's one thing that Trace, I don't want to say may struggle with, because I mean, the kid's been absolutely phenomenal. He's been very, you know, the best player in the country the last 45 days or so. But something he struggles with a bit is if he's not comfortable, sometimes his decision making can lack a bit. So that would be what I would do if I was coaching, is just different looks, and just try to make that guy be uncomfortable in whatever way you can. But like you said, at this point, Trace has seen it all and he's still putting up big numbers. So I'm not sure there's really a blueprint or game plan to just say, like, stop Trace.
This next question, there's a caveat and then there's a but. So it's always not a criticism of coach, but, and this is what it is. This person writes in, I'm concerned about the minutes Trayce Jackson-Davis is playing. I know he's our most productive player, and until someone else can consistently step up, it's hard to sit him, but I worry that when the tournament comes, his legs may be gone and he may be spent. Do you think this is a legitimate concern?
Yeah, I really don't. And only because, you know, Trayce is phenomenal shape, great athlete. He's playing twice a week at these numbers. They have a training staff where they're getting, you know, phenomenal treatment, top of the line treatment. I'm not really concerned about the minutes. And it actually, I was talking to a friend about this recently. It actually has been almost a pleasant surprise to me at how much Woody has shortened his bench and given guys more minutes due to last year. You know, the gripe on Woody was that he's playing the second unit altogether. You know, these five guys, they're getting too many minutes. The line changes don't work. That's an NBA rotation style. Doesn't work in the college game. And, you know, a guy that's 64 years old, pretty set in their ways on how they operate typically, has completely deviated from that. You know, now you're seeing Trayce Jackson-Davis pretty much never comes off the floor. You know, there used to be a time where I was like, there's no reason Trayce and Race should ever be off the floor at the same time last season, because he would do that for long stretches, and it would allow Big Ten opponents to get back in the game or go on a run or whatever the case may be. He's completely flipped that on his head. So to me, it's a little bit of a positive, because it's a change where he's just going to play guys that he's comfortable playing, that he thinks are going to give him the best chance to win. Now, would it be nice to be able to spell Trayce a couple minutes here and there? Absolutely. But I'm not as concerned with it as some may be. You know, my major concern is that when the bench does get in there, there's little to no production. And, you know, so you kind of see why Woody's riding what he's riding, because when he's putting these guys in, especially on the road, they're just not getting a lot.
Next question is in regards to Xavier Johnson, which we don't know for sure when he's going to come back. But how do you feel, or how do you think the lineups will adjust and rotations will adjust if he comes back? And how, I guess, will the process look in terms of integrating him back in? It seems to me there's the schedule sets up now. There's really no great time to bring a player back that's missed this long. You know, I kind of look at maybe that Iowa home game as the best opportunity of any of these, because you're at home, and I look at the remaining home opponents. You know, Illinois and Michigan have been teams historically that Indiana hasn't necessarily played great against the last couple of years. Iowa seems like a pretty good opportunity to maybe bring him back if that's when he's ready. I some people said bring him back at Purdue, and I'm like, I don't know how that's really setting somebody up for success in their first game. But there's going to be some rust to for any player that's missed this period of time. I'm just curious, like, how you think, well, this person, and I'm curious too to know how you think they'll bring him back and reintegrate him into the lineup, and how that will change lineups. I think it could mean like a lot less minutes for somebody like Tamar Bates, who at this point hasn't produced much at all.
Yeah. From a kind of a precedent standpoint as well, with what Woody did with Race, you know, pretty much inserted him right back into the starting lineup and just kind of said, get your sea legs, you know, kind of baptism by fire. So from a precedent standpoint, that's kind of what I see happening, is X is just kind of right back in that lineup and see what happens, you know, kind of thing. Now, obviously, they are integrating him into practice. And, you know, I heard he was doing a lot of swimming to try to keep at least his lungs in some sort of shape while his foot was rehabbing, which is good. But, you know, as everybody knows, basketball shape is different than a running or a swimming shape or whatever. You know, it's short bursts, get a little rest, short bursts, get a little rest. So, you know, it's going to take some time, like you said, and there's going to be some rust. But absolutely, totally agree with a guy like Tamar Bates probably getting less minutes, especially if this bench stays short. You know, probably moves Galloway back to like a backup wing / ball handler, spells, you know, Xavier or Jalen Hood-Schifino at times, and kind of can be the leader of the second unit, if you will, if there is such a thing at this point. But yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, there's really no blueprint of success to do something like this, especially this late in the season. You know, the one thing I can remember of like a guy coming back from a pretty serious injury towards the end of the season was like a Paul George. After his leg break, the Pacers inserted him, I think, like in late April. You know, wasn't the same player until the following season. And so I think that's the main thing, is fans probably need to temper expectations of what Xavier Johnson will be at this comeback. You know, last year at this time, he was playing probably the best basketball of anybody on the team, perhaps even more so than Trace. And you know, to expect that right out of the gate, or even at all this season is probably unrealistic. And so I think that'll be important. I think it's also important to note that I don't think Indiana needs Xavier Johnson to be what he was last season. You know, they've got Jalen Hood-Schifino who can be a lead guard and do a lot of good things. And now you've got somebody else that can attack in spots. Now trying to tell Xavier, hey, you need to temper expectations. You need to, you know, integrate yourself properly. Probably not going to work. You know, he's a guy that's 110%. He's going to give it everything he's got for better or for worse. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. And like I said, there's no right answer. And so it'll be something that's fun to follow.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Last question I want to get into from the community, and then we'll talk about some other things here. And this is more of a schematic question, and I feel that it would be pretty good to ask you. The gist of the question is asking if Indiana's offense, I guess, is too deliberate right now in terms of just throwing the ball into Trace Jackson Davis. This person writes in, they appear to be more effective moving quickly, passing to TJD, and then are allowing him double teams to form. When TJD immediately attacks, it causes teams to be out of position where cutters or shooters are opening. The other two becomes too much of a two-man game. Just kind of what do you think in terms of just throwing the ball in? I mean, that's kind of what Indiana does, right? They're letting Trace Jackson Davis dictate the offense. And to his credit, he's been a really good passer out of the post. I mean, look at his assist numbers. He almost had a triple double at Northwestern. You know, I don't necessarily see any issue with how Indiana's playing offensively right now. They're much better as a whole. You look at their KenPom number, they're surprisingly a better offensive team this year than defensively. Who would have predicted that going into the season? So, if there's bones to pick right now with how this team's playing, I don't necessarily see much offensively that could be a whole lot different. Maybe taking a little bit higher volume of threes at times based on the percentage they're shooting, but it's hard to argue with can just feed Trace Jackson Davis and see what happens, right?
Absolutely. And you know, Indiana in terms of post up offense, I think in the country they are like in the 85th percentile or something like that in post up offense. And not even post up. You know, what I like about what Indiana's done is they're getting Trace the ball in different places, a lot of times at the top of the key, and letting him make decisions from there, whether that be find an open man, whether that be driving on a guy that can't stay in front of him. You know, I really don't have too many qualms with Indiana's offense. I like Trace Jackson Davis in ball screens with Jalen Hood-Schifino. You know, Jalen Hood-Schifino's 15 footer is money. Now, when he steps it out to like 17, 18 foot step backs, that's when you start running into kind of the bad shot area. But when he's in rhythm pulling up from 15 off ball screens against drop coverage, like I'm completely okay with that. It helped Indiana win the game against Purdue. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to really be disappointed in what Indiana's doing offensively. Like you said, top 20 offense in KenPom. And they're efficient and they play fast. You know, their tempo is good. But when you look at their average possession length, they're in the top 50, I think, in the country, number two in conference play. And so I like what they're doing. Maybe a little bit more ball screen action when Xavier's back, but to be down the amount of guys that Indiana's been down this season and still maintain a top 20 offense, against where they were last year offensively, not a lot I can say that's really negative about that.
I think a lot of that also comes down to the fact that you've got an NBA guard in your backcourt now, right? I mean, the numbers are going to go up. Whatever inconsistencies Jalen Hood-Schifino has, he's popping up now on mock drafts as a late lottery pick, and some people thinking he can go even higher than that, and I could definitely see it with a strong March. You don't have many guards in college basketball that can score in the variety of ways that he can, and, he's obviously still learning on the job, and he's had some rough games here and there, but for the most part, I think adding a dynamic piece to the backcourt going along with Trayce Jackson-Davis and then just having a solid supporting cast of characters has really been the reason that Indiana's taken a major leap offensively. In terms of the bench production, it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately because I think Indiana had 3 bench points at Northwestern. Jordan Geronimo had that little mini run there where he got inserted in the starting lineup, didn't look good for a couple of games, and then seemed to find his footing. Then he gets hurt. Race Thompson comes back. He's not playing a lot of minutes. Tamar Bates, we mentioned earlier, just doesn't seem to be able to produce with any consistency. He had that great game against Michigan State, and then you look at the game log around that, it's a bunch of zeros or 2-point games or 3-point games. Just not a lot of variety in the way he can produce offense other than a spot up shooter. And Malik Renew has really struggled to stay on the floor without fouling. And it's almost like one of those things where I don't want to say he's being targeted, but you basically expect that when he comes in, he's going to get a foul right away. It's almost like a baseball player that can't throw the ball to first base, right? And it just keeps happening over and over. It's almost like he can't stop doing it for whatever reason. I even asked him, I think at a press conference a couple of weeks, if he, what he was seeing on film, and I thought he had a pretty good answer. He's reaching when he doesn't need to and not being straight up, things like that. But I just wonder if what Woods has been doing lately in terms of just riding the starting lineup for as many games as possible is going to have to be the solution, because I just don't know that when it comes to, the NCAA tournament, how much you're going to be able to run these guys out there in a big spot when you're trying to win the game. It might be a situation where these guys are going to be going 35 to 38 minutes a game and you live with it. Do you agree with that? And how surprised are you that these guys, it's not a negative thing. It's just reality looking at the numbers, but overall, it just seems like Renew, Bates, and Geronimo haven't earned the trust of the coaching staff to get any more minutes than what they're getting right now. And it may be a scenario when Xavier Johnson's back, they could be playing even less.
I completely agree with it. It's kind of winning time at this point, especially in the NCAA tournament. You're going to give your best product on the floor to try to win games. And right now, that's your guys and your starting five. I mean, to be honest, and I think Malik Renew, when he's out there, he's productive and he can be productive. But when you've got a foul rate that's over 7 per 40 minutes, like, it's just impossible to stay on the floor. You pick up 2 quick ones. And the thing with Renew that always bothers me is it's like they're like 94 feet from the basket. At least one of them in the first half is always trying to get a rebound over the back, or, you push a guy on a rebound or something of those sorts. And if you can cut those out, he just doesn't really even have an opportunity to get into the flow of the game. And once he does, because he had 2 great passes against Northwestern last week. He kind of did the same thing that Trayce was doing to Race. Backed the guy down, got doubled, dumped it off to Trayce. Trayce got 2 layups. But then, he gets a silly foul. He gets a silly turnover. And then it's just like that confidence gets lost very quickly. And then, you don't trust them anymore. So as a head coach, at this point in the season, you are what you are. It's basically, if you're inconsistent, you're inconsistent, and your coach is going to have a hard time trusting you. So, especially away from home, that's really been where the inconsistencies have really reared their ugly head. So, I'm with you. I think you ride that 5, with Xavier being back, assuming that he's going to be pretty much inserted back in the lineup, rather quickly. You've got a Galloway that you trust. And then outside of that, that's six. You know, it's, you can spell some of the bigs with Malik Renew and hope he doesn't get in foul trouble and could be productive. But from a guard and wing perspective, especially, I'm not sure you can trust anything there. And, you know, with Geronimo, it's been kind of like this basically throughout his entire IU career. There's a lot of ups and downs, that you just don't know what you're going to get. And when, if you don't know what you're going to get as a coach, it's really hard to put that guy in a game in big situations. You know, it's what we saw against Minnesota. You know, Race was just coming back from injury and he was ridden the last 15 minutes of the game or something like that. And Coach Yost said, it was the, it's who I trusted. And so it's not a great position to be in. Don't get me wrong. You don't want to only have to play five or six guys, but where Indiana is at right now from a production level, it's tough to do more than that.
Fair or not, Bates, I think, is scrutinized a little more heavily than other guys just based on his ranking where he came in. How surprised have you been? And he showed up in the preseason on a lot of those breakout players lists. I kind of feel like sometimes that's a lazy exercise because people just look at the rankings the year before and they look at a guy that maybe didn't play as much, didn't have a great year, and you say, you know, you can kind of do the same thing with Christian Lander. Well, he didn't play good his first year, and he was ranked high. And I'm not comparing Tamar Bates in terms of impact to Christian Lander, but, you know, they're ranked similar coming in, and, you know, his offensive rating as a freshman was really poor. It's a lot better this year. It's just, I think when you watch him, the breakdowns that he has defensively oftentimes, and just the limited nature of how he can impact the game offensively, you don't really want him dribbling and trying to go into traffic because he often turns the ball over. Not a great passer. He's just a spot-up shooter. I'm curious kind of what your expectations were out of him coming into the season and maybe what you've seen as you, I know you watch these games closely and do a lot of film reviews. What do you think is maybe holding him back from being able to be a guy that, because the talent is certainly there, I feel like, but it doesn't seem like the production is matching the talent on a consistent basis.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to find the right word because a lot of people use like the IQ. I don't think he has a low basketball IQ. I think he has poor court awareness. Like just, sometimes he's just in a completely wrong spot that doesn't make a lot of sense. Or the other night against Northwestern, he drove in and then he tried to kick out to Trace, who was cutting. Like, why are you trying to kick out to Trace at the 3-point line? You know, just like that court awareness aspect of it just seems to be lacking. And it's what's bizarre to me is, you know, I went back and watched some of his games at IMG, and there was multiple times where there was multiple five stars on the floor, and Tamar was the best player on the floor. His spatial awareness was good. Defensively, he was locked in. I mean, because you look at him, his frame is perfect to be a great defender in the Big Ten. He just is a step slow, and you know, he gets lost and turns his head. So I don't know if it's just a thing where he's struggling to schematically adapt to, you know, what Woody's asking of him. And then, you know, an exercise that a lot of people do is like, hey, guys usually make their biggest jump from freshman year to sophomore year. And that's when you're going to see a big jump. You know, we saw it with Armon Franklin. You see it a lot of times in college basketball. I'm not sure that we can like count last year as Tamar's freshman year. It was his freshman year for sure, but he had a lot happen where his focus could not have fully been on basketball no matter what. You know, I'm a father, you're a father. We know what that takes to be a father, especially when you're trying to learn how to be a first time father. And so I almost wonder if like, this is Tamar Bates' freshman season that we're really seeing. Like it's the first time he's been able to go through a full season, off season workouts with not a lot of distractions, things like that. And maybe we see that typical freshman to sophomore jump be a sophomore to junior jump, where he's locked in the off season scout, you know, he's doing his workouts. They're showing him film of where his breakdowns are at and how he can be better. You know, shot selection, that part of what hurts Tamar so much is his shot selection. You know, he just take a couple of dribbles and fire one sometimes it seems because he thinks that's what he's supposed to do. And so, like you said, the talent's there, seems like a tremendous kid, seems like he wants to do the right thing. Obviously, I'm just not so sure if this isn't kind of his introduction to college basketball, and maybe next season we see that leap, or we may not. You know, it's hard to say. But you know, ranked highly for a good reason. You know, sometimes people say like, you know, rankings can throw them out the window. I watched him in high school. Kid was tremendous. Had all the tools of what, and that was why he was ranked highly. you know, I certainly wouldn't give up on him as IU fans because he's got the talent.
You mentioned something there in that answer that kind of stuck out to me just in terms of defense, and it got me thinking, you know, same thing with Renew at times and even Geronimo. It seemed not even a step slow, maybe a half step slow or just a little bit out of position. And we always heard during the Archie era with the pack line, you know, there's a learning curve. These guys have to get used to playing this defense. Is there anything with what Indiana's doing now defensively that takes adjustment from the high school level, or is there anything that is difficult to pick up? Because as Mike Woodson describes it, you know, there's a lot of just, hey, keep your guy from getting around you, and let's just play straight man to man. It's not like these guys, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of obviously there's scheme to it, but it's whether or not can you get down and guard somebody and stay in front of them to simplify it. I'm curious, just from your perspective, is there something maybe that we're missing when we're watching the games that we're not seeing that is hard to pick up from a defensive standpoint that may be holding a few of these guys back?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is more sophisticated off-ball actions. You know, where in high school there's a lot of standing, and then there's like your primary ball screens happening, and then off the ball there's not a lot happening. You can kind of stand there and you go in the help side. Well, then all of a sudden you're on that help side position, but your guy just set a down screen and now he's coming off of a curl, and you're like, oh crap. And that's where you kind of run into that half step slow scenario. And then you have a long closeout. Well, long closeouts typically lead to drives. You're sprinting one direction, a guy's cutting another direction. And then that looks like you're getting beat off the dribble, where in reality, you were probably half a step slow in your closeout. And then that just compounds everything. And then all of a sudden you're in big trouble on the ball. So there's that, certainly. And then, you know, just being able to move, like that's what's been weird for me with Tamar, is just being able to keep a guy in front, like you noted, even when you're just playing one-on-one, guy just is trying to get to the rim and just allowing a straight line drive, like feet not positioned properly. And some of that goes with just, you know, coaches picking things up on film that you probably wouldn't see in high school. Like, hey, this guy's going to open his hips just a little bit. You're going to have a straight line drive. Obviously, guys that he's playing against are more athletic, more skilled. That certainly factors in. But, you know, Woody's scheme is pretty simple, to be honest, defensively. Like you noted, you're basically playing in a gap between the ball and your man. And then when your man's got the ball, you're trying not to let them get to the middle of the floor. You know, things that you're taught when you're pretty young defensively. Now, don't get me wrong, there's ball screen coverages and different things that they're obviously doing, but you're trying to funnel everything to Trace Jackson Davis to be able to block shots. And that's what they do. So in the grand scheme of things, at a 40,000 foot level, not extremely difficult, I think, to execute.
Last thing before we get you out of here, specific to Illinois on Saturday, I wrote in my preview, there's several things in the first game that are unlikely to be repeated. And this isn't specific to the Trace Jackson Davis defense, but even more so, Illinois was 9 of 23 from the free throw line. I mean, they are one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the Big Ten. I don't think they're going to shoot 9 of 23 again. Matthew Meyer was sick in the first game. I believe it was revealed post game, played 22 minutes, didn't score. I don't think that's going to happen again. So there's definitely some things that went in Indiana's favor in the first game that probably are unlikely to be repeated. What do you feel like Indiana's going to have to do well on Saturday to win? The thing that comes top of mind to me is Indiana, the turnovers at this point, it didn't really hurt them against Northwestern if you looked at the points off turnovers, because Northwestern is not a team that can really capitalize on that. Illinois is a team that if you give them live ball turnovers, they have guys that are going to go to the other end and get an easy basket. So to me, that's a big thing. And also Illinois' offensive rebounding has been really strong this year. I feel like Indiana's going to have a really solid game on the defensive glass. You agree with those points, and just overall, what do you kind of see as the keys to this matchup on Saturday?
I do. And Meyer is a big one. And before I knew he was sick, I thought it was a big one last game too, because Kopp is kind of who's checking him. And, you know, I think Kopp gets a bad rep as is not a great defender. I think he on the ball struggles a bit, but he positions himself as well as anybody on the Indiana defense. And so I don't think he's a bad defender, but you know, Meyer's a guy that can pop off and you know, go get 20 on you. And you know, Indiana was, like you said, was pretty fortunate. He didn't score in the last game, and that's not to discredit Miller Kopp, or anything like that. But I think that's a key matchup defensively that Indiana, will have to key on. Again, Illinois is streaky team where, you know, I think what they're shooting not well from 3-point line, but it seems like, I don't know if I could be completely wrong, but it always just seems like one or two games a year, somebody just catches lightning in a bottle against Indiana that shouldn't. And
Coleman Hawkins comes to mind last year in the Big Ten tournament, right?
Absolutely. And, yeah.
And he shot pretty bad the first game. So it feels like he's probably due to knock in two or three.
Yeah. I think last year was the Coleman Hawkins versus Race Thompson 3-point contest in the Big Ten tournament. You know, so those are things that scare me a little bit from Indiana from a defensive perspective, especially with some of the breakdowns that Indiana has defensively. You know, guys just kind of get lost sometimes and you end up with, you know, I don't care if they shoot 32% from 3-point line. If they're wide open, they're going to shoot it at a higher clip. And Indiana sometimes struggles to cover guys from the outside. Guy sees one go in, now he's got some confidence going, and it can kind of snowball. You know, we saw that against Penn State at Penn State. So that's what scares me defensively. Offensively, like you mentioned, unforced turnovers. Some of the turnovers that Indiana has are just head scratchers. You know, guys dribbling off their foot. You know, just passes. We were like, what the heck was that? You know, Jalen Huchefino, for as good as he's been, that oop pass he tried to throw to Trace was one of the worst passes I've seen in a while. I mean, that thing was off the top of the backboard. You know, just little subtleties like that, like he's mentioned, they're going to be able to capitalize on that. And so, you know, you have to be able to hone in on those things. And then if they do throw different coverages at Trace, just being able to, guys on the outside being able to step up and knock shots down. You know, Miller Kopp, I feel like, is one to me that has passed up so many good looks this season because of his release is just slow. You know, there's no other way to really put it. And, you know, he's a guy that he's passed up a lot of good open threes for contested twos. And you know, to me, he's got to have a game at one point this year where it's just like, you know, I guess Rutgers, he had one on the road, but where it's just, you know, be a dead eye shooter, make them have to guard you and open things up. So, you know, I'm confident in what Indiana can do against Illinois, but they are one that scares you. They're playing better of late, much better than they were when Indiana played them last time around. And you know, they're one of those teams that can, like I mentioned, catch lightning in a bottle and all of a sudden you kind of wake up and you're down 15. And so Indiana's got to avoid that. That's something they've been doing the last couple games as well. You know, Michigan, they were able to overcome it and get a win. But, you know, getting down double digits in the first half, you know, they did against Arizona, did against Kansas, I believe did against Rutgers. So, you know, a lot of the losses they've incurred this season, they were down double digits in the first half and really didn't come out ready to play. So something you definitely got to avoid. Obviously, you're going to have the Assembly home crowd, which is nice, but it's a noon game. So, you know, students will be just waking up, I think, you know, not going to be as raucous as a 4 o'clock or 8 o'clock start. So, yeah, there's just, you know, it'll be an interesting one. Like I mentioned, I'm confident what Indiana can do. And I think they ultimately do get the win, but I think, you know, as fans, you know, wouldn't expect a 20-point beatdown again.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. And it's crazy to think there's only 5 games in the regular season left. A lot of people talking about whether Indiana can get a double bye in the Big Ten tournament. They basically need to win out every home game, and I think they may need to win a road game. I've been looking at a lot of those tiebreaker scenarios, and you know, Maryland and Northwestern are right there with them, and Maryland owns a tiebreaker with Indiana because they beat them head to head. They only played once, and Northwestern certainly owns it. So not a lot of margin for error for Indiana right now in terms of getting that double bye. Tony, it's always good to talk hoops with you. Thanks for making the time with us on Friday on Podcast on the Brink.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Alex.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, as always, to this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating on Spotify, and we'll be back soon with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6-packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.